Okay, so yeah, the reconquest of the Soviet Union and the rest of the socialist world was an enormous windfall for Wall Street. Then all this money went to Wall Street, and this financed the creation, the final emplacement of the spectacle around the Earth to create the digitality as a world system. And I'm borrowing that little phrase from Jonathan Beller, who said digitality is a world system. And he's speaking from a mediaological perspective that's actually correct. It's kind of orthodox Marxist. His work went into an odd direction where he has started to have a sort of tech determinism that it's still really insightful, though I think ultimately he wandered into error, but it's still really insightful and important. But the idea of the digitality as a world system is basically the same thing that Marx was talking about, without having around him the concrete reality that we have that makes everything so obvious. I mean, he saw what was happening in Capital. He understood it and explained it anthropologically. In its very early stages, its embryonic stages, and of the system that we have now, which is a complete sort of doubling of everything, of the universe, of nature, in a spectacle, which is also Capital, also finance, as Debord explained, has sort of advanced that notion. But he took a little step back from Marx. I mean, although it's also very, very insightful and important to me. But okay, so I'm going back to Marx here, because Marx is the key to everything, and I know it's like a stereotype, of like the Marxist, and I had this all my life, really all my life, like from elementary school on. People would say, oh, you Marxist, you think that Marx had the answer to everything. And the reason that's a stereotype is because there were a lot of people, millions, tens of millions of people have felt that way, because it's true, because Marx had the answer to everything. In fact, Marx grasped something really profound as a total vision that a lot of people intuited and saw pieces of and even understood, but couldn't express the way and didn't have the determination to express and explain as he did so thoroughly. But as a total vision, the totalizing is the key. And to have a vision that in the early manuscripts, the anthropology that set out and a philosophical vision of nature, it's not really philosophical, but encompassing all of the human sciences, and then to explain capitalism in that perspective is the most profound thing that we have. It's the most true. It's still true. And how people go wrong often with Marx is to think that, he was saying capitalism, that he was describing the mechanics, the imperatives, the famous market of imperatives, was the whole story. And in fact, it's a picture of what the situation that the people he was organizing were in at the moment. And he was trying to describe it, to put a weapon in their hands, to because he said, here are these people who have the power to overthrow the ruling class and end class and bring about communism. They have the interest in doing that and have the power to do it. And he wanted to explain exactly why those people, the proletariat in Europe, had this power. And but he had planned other books, to describe other aspects of the world beside the capitalist mode of production. And he saw capitalism as continuous, that it's there was a long durée, there's a, as class society, it was a form of class society, it was a moment, a situation in class society. And he made some observations about it that would allow us to predict what's happening now, exactly what he foresaw that he hoped to avert is happening now. Of course, his beliefs that the proletariat would overthrow the ruling class also occurred, you know, not long after his death, not that many decades, a few decades after. And it lasted a while, and what happened was the ruling class adapted, transformed, struck back, and won. And that's where we are now. And they're transforming for the very reasons that Marx explained, or the contradictions in Capital. They're transforming the mode of production. So, and they were able to do this. It was an enormous victory, the victory of the Soviet Union, because it wasn't just that, it's impossible to describe how important that was, how that changed the whole game, because, up until then, the communist movement had armies, had tax bases, enormous resources, power to resist, power to support revolutions world over. Now, sometimes, revisionism is a disaster, and, peaceful coexistence, blah, 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 blah. But, there's political problems, but just the fact that the communist, the communist forces on the earth were a match for the capitalist ones, was an enormous check on what the a capitalist imperialist could do. Now they're unchecked. Humanity doesn't have an air force of its own. Air power is really, really a big factor. The first revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, happened before air power, and the Bolsheviks then developed air power alongside everyone else, and they could support other revolutions and defeat the Nazis, support the Chinese Revolution, build on that. And that was a really important fact. Now humanity is in a jar, that with the capital controlling the skies, controlling everything. And seems pretty dire. But okay, so what's happening now is precisely that the ruling class, the famous contradictions of Capital that Marx describes are all true. The most important ones, the most salient ones for the ruling class, that the ruling class understands really well and understands better than, clerks, because they do it every day. They're doing Capital every day. They're exploiting every day. And, so the biggest problem for capitalists in capitalism, in actual capitalism, is the falling rate of profit, the tendency of the rate of profit to fall, which became the actual fall of the rate of profit. And the fact that you make your grave diggers, that the proletariat really has all the power, and every day that you wake up a capitalist, you are teetering on the verge of being overthrown by the working class. So the capitalists took a lot of measures to say, this system is not good for us, it's precarious. As we see, we were overthrown across the world, and let's transform the system into something more stable. And the first stage of that was that, in order to do that, we have to get everything in our hands. It can't be that property is kind of distributed with a lot of parity all over the world, and that there are these huge populations who control a lot of stuff and own their own homes and have their hands on the gears of social production. So financialization was the major method to shake loose all the property of other people and collect all the titles in the hands of the ruling class and then of a smaller block of the ruling class. So that was the 80s. And they managed to topple the Soviet Union, plunder everything, turn it into the tech, and the real estate bubble, of course, later. But the first thing was the tech, and they created these, you know, the dot-com boom, which bubble in the Clinton era, which collapsed, of course, and NASDAQ crashed. But all these things, you know, that these companies, if you could call them companies, that run the world now, they're not businesses. They're not business ventures at all. Amazon had no profit for 10 years. It was hemorrhaging billions of dollars. You know, Google, all this stuff is Intel. It has very little to do with capitalism per se. It's not making commodities and selling them for profits. It does make commodities. It commodifies everything. The commodity form is something that is going to has been inherited by the next system. But basically, once financialization had reached a certain point, there ceased to be recognizable imperatives at the so-called commanding heights of the economy. And I discussed that in my other little SoundClouds. So, but the tech stuff, this is really visible that these companies were started without a business model. I mean, you know, YouTube was streaming and you know, other media were looking at it going, you know, what is this with the UGC and stuff? But it's like, yeah, they can get a lot of eyeballs, but how do you turn this into capital, right? That was the big question. And then there was this idea that there would be a new business model. And of course, the savvy people are going, no, all there is advertising. You could have advertising, you could have subscription. There's nothing else. Nobody's going to think of anything else. And that turned out to be very true. So it's mysterious how, you know, without real profit, the valuations go up and up and up. And this is because the financial system has transformed. It found an infinity. It found the infinity of absolute slavery. And when you think about how value is produced in capital, you realize it has to do with, you know, that there's a labor market where labor power is being sold, that it's got to be sold, and nobody's going to sell their labor power for less than, you know, much below subsistence. That can't be sustained. But you could transform this, you could make an infinity of value in slavery and absolute power, because value is the wedding of use value and exchange value and, you know, clumps of labor power. So, you know, if you imagine, you know, what is value? I like this painting of the air pump that is an 18th century painting by Joseph Wright of Derby that shows this family, you know, doing an experiment in their barn or whatever to show a vacuum, where they have a glass bowl that's sealed and a vacuum is being created, and there's a bird in the bowl who's being suffocated by this vacuum. And this is a wonderful picture of value, the apparatus, that it's the enclosure. We experience enclosure as the enclosure of the natural world, that someone is putting the sign up saying, do not trespass, in front of the stream, but it's actually the individuals that are being enclosed. You see, as you enclose more and more of the world, the individual, you realize it's the individual is being put in an airtight bubble, you know, where we are cut off from what we need, and that's value. That's the precondition of value. in all class society. So you would have, you know, and it's an early capitalism that, you know, people start to theorize, they transform the vision of what the human species was. Because it used to be the vision would be, the most popular kind of vision was like Isis and Osiris, or, you know, Mary and Jesus, like two people, one of either sex. That's humanity. That's the smallest little microcosm of humanity that you could have, because otherwise you can't have any more. So, and then it became sort of the individual, an individual man, like the Vitruvian man. I like to show the Leonardo da Vinci, where he's it's just one man there, and it's actually a corpse, right? It's not a picture of the human species, because he doesn't have what he needs to survive, and he can't reproduce by himself. So what is that individual, you know? And this was something that Marx also noticed and wanted to correct. So anyway, this idea of value, and this is what the ruling class and especially these Silicon Valley people, they understand that the key to being masters of the human species, to enslaving everyone, is, you know, this kind of enclosure. You have to maximize the enclosure and get it into their bodies. Like if you could implant something in someone's heart that would turn off their heart if they stopped running on the treadmill, then you could make them run on a treadmill. This is something that Marx understood. That's the very beginning of all expropriation. And because the secret of value, of accumulation, is that we as a species were an organic species that was not evolved to work 10 hours a day. We were evolved to like hunt for an hour. So that if you take everything away from us that we need, and you could make us hunt a lot, and you could get a lot of surplus. It's like if you followed a lioness around, and every time she killed a gazelle for her cubs and her man and herself, you took it away, then she might keep killing and killing all day. And then it finally, at the end of the day, you let her have one. So you get her tomorrow. And that's, you know, exploitation. That's what the exploitation of people is. And the Silicon Valley people have figured out that if you leave people any room to do something, any freedom at all, to resist your rule and your robbery, that you can't take everything away from them. As soon, you know, and they can't completely control them. And they are going for the deepest possible enclosures in your own body or as close to you. So they've enclosed everything. The social media was really a huge leap, because it enclosed everything that lay outside the time sold to the employer, even though that had expanded into the whole life. For a lot of people in the core, the imperial core in the rich countries, this really did, because it enclosed all the relations, and now you know you can't participate in our society without doing so through the social media that's capitalizing and controlling your social relations, transforming them.